very much for the invitation. I'm talking about an open problem, but still an open problem. It's a very attractive and interesting open problem. It's the analog of it's an infinitary problem. It's the analog of a known planetary state. So what I'll do is I'll tell you what the problem is, and then I'll tell you why it's an interesting problem. And what I mainly want to talk about is some ideas. So what they do is the finite tree statement used to have a very complicated proof. This gives a much shorter, simpler proof of the finite tree statement. But what I'm really excited is that I believe it should give the first line of the proof of the main open problem. Well, you'll see what I mean later on. So it couldn't have been answered. So I'm really interested because it's the infinite tree statement. But officially, I'm telling you, it does the finite tree in a very nice, clear way. Okay, so we're looking at colourings of the natural numbers. So let me remind you about, well, you've heard what Heinemann's theorem is from Dolan's talk. Let me remind you what Heinemann's theorem is and the finite version of it. So here's the finite sums theorem. You take the natural numbers and you colour finitely colours. So that's always going to mean whenever the naturals are finitely coloured. We write about 1,000 times in the talk. Coloured, there exist x1 up to xk such that all sums from those are the same colour. Monochromatic. This is one statement for each k, so I should start off by saying for every k. And what does finite sums mean? It means all finite sums. So things like x1 plus x3 plus x7. But you can't repeat, you can't take x1 plus x1. Okay, and that is sometimes called Folkman's theorem or Sander's theorem, but it's contained in Rado's theorem from the 1930s. So it's what anyone's name should have the name Rado on it. Anyway, it's normally called finite sums, but I mentioned it's often called Folkman's theorem or Sander's theorem. So there's a question of, do you put S apostrophe or S apostrophe S? I'm putting S apostrophe. If you'd rather have an S afterwards, that's fine.
S apostrophe.
Okay, good. Okay, great. Good. Wonderful. And but it's a case of Rado's theorem. Okay, and actually, as far as today is concerned, I sort of hope you don't know proof of that. But if you do know proof of it, I think I want you to forget the proof. Reason I'll come to in a second. Okay, and then given this, there was the famous question, can we actually get infinitely many x's that work? And that was answered by Heinemann. So Heinemann's theorem. Is an interesting version of that. It says, whenever the naturals are finely coloured, there's infinite sequence, such that all the finite sums from the infinite sequence are monochromatic. And say, if you know proof of that, I'm unhappy, please forget the proof you know. Okay. Right, that's Heinemann's theorem. Now, let's just forget Heinemann's theorem for a second. Supposing I made the following rather weaker statement. Whenever the naturals are funny, is this visible? Not really. Let's go for a different blue. Oh, get rid of it, okay.
Give it to me.
Okay, the other blue.
I'll be free.
Okay, so whenever the naturals are finely coloured, you can find a sequence, x1, x2, and so on, such that all the xi are the same colour. Yes, that's just pigeonhole. That's sort of trivial. Oh, by the way, whenever I write a sequence, I'll always assume the terms are distinct. So I write sequence in increasing order. So if everything becomes trivial by saying take all xi the same, imagine there. Okay, so that's just trivial, that's a pigeonhole. Equally, suppose I asked you the following statement. Whenever the naturals are finely coloured, you can find a sequence such that all the pairwise sums, all the xi plus xj, set I not equals j. Well, that's immediate by Ramsey's theorem. Because given your colouring of natural numbers, the edge from I to j give it the colour of your colouring of I plus j. Mm. If you think about it, Ramsey says there's an infinite monomorphic set. In other words, an infinite set of indices so that summing two has the same colour. Okay, so all the same colour, trivial pigeonhole, all some same colour, well, trivial, I mean, at this level, trivial, just Ramsey. Of course, if you do this, then that, you get a sequence where all the xi plus xj are the same colour, and also all the xi are the same colour, might be a different colour. So, given these two, you then ask, what about all those together? Are all sums of size 1 and 2, if you like? So you then say, you want to know, is it true or false, as we're finely coloured, there exists x1, x2, and so on, such that I'll write finite sums subscript at most 2 to mean it's the sums with either 1 or 2 terms in them. Now, that is certainly a true statement, because it's a very special case of Heinemann's theorem. Right? Heinemann says you find a sequence with all finite sums the same colour, so all singletons, pairs, triples, and so on. So trivially, by Heinemann's theorem, you can find a sequence with all singletons and pairs the same colour. So the question, the open problem, stated at first informally, is there a proof of that that doesn't go via Heinemann's theorem? Using Heinemann. You're allowed to object and say, what does that formally mean? It means nothing at all, of course. I'll get to the formal statement in a second. Okay, so, is there a proof that doesn't either quote Heinemann's theorem or, if you like, cheat by reproving Heinemann's theorem? It's informally clear what it means. Like, really ought to exist. You're not asking much. You're asking singletons and pairs. They're each monomorphic separately by just trivial Ramsey and pigeonhole, and put them together, even the benefit of knowing it's a true statement, it is true, it's false from Heinemann, but can it be proved without Heinemann's theorem? So that is a question. Now, I'll tell you what the formal version of that is, which is a real question, and I'll say, how they're related, this informal statement here, and the actual question. So let me keep that at the bottom. So here's the actual question, and I'll tell you how they're related, and then we'll get on to seeing why it's an interesting question. Is there a set S, linear natural numbers, so that S is rich enough that whenever you finally colour S, you get one of these things, but not so rich that you get Heinemann's theorem holding it? So this should be a test. Such that, firstly, whenever S finely coloured, so obviously a distant notation, there exists x1, x2 with the finite sums size of those two from x1, x2 so on monochromatic, but S doesn't contain a Hyman system, doesn't contain finite sums of y1, y2, ever. I mean, for any sequence wise. Oh, just by the way, if you know Hyman theorem, that same statement as saying whenever you colour, there's a copy of finite sums. Because if you have one copy of finite sums, Hyman's theorem says if you just colour that object with finite colours, you get a finite sums again. So that's a question. Get there to that's an interesting question. So it's all competing things. It'll be rich enough in terms of structure that you have some size of those two, but poor enough you never get all sums. Okay, now how are these related? Well, they're basically the same thing. So first of all, supposing I wanted to answer this question positively. Okay, so I've come up with my wonderful cool set S that has these properties. I've got a proof it's got those properties. Okay. Proving this will be easy. I'll just show you that given any sequence, some parts are missing from your set. That's some easy math. How am I going to convince you from fact number one? I've got to prove to you that whenever you finitely colour S, there exists a sequence of sums of those two. But that proof of mine better not show you get all finite sums from the X's. So in that sense, I have to have a proof of this thing in S, so trivially, in naturals, trivially, that isn't by Hyman's theorem. So that's the sense in which that's the precise version of that statement. What I mean, this is the real question. And you can't answer that without doing that, basically. Oh, and conversely, it's pretty certain, it's not a formal statement. Suppose you could find a proof of this that wasn't by Hyman. Well, it's not guaranteed, but it's pretty clear. If you ran that proof in kind of minimal environmental numbers, you'd run it in a place where Hyman wasn't true. But that's not a formal, of course, but that's a sort of fair bet. So this is the official aim, and that's really what's going on. Okay, so why is this an interesting question? So let me remind you a bit about sparse Ramsey theorems. This is a general background of why this is an interesting question. Some people say structural, some say sparse. It means things where you want a Ramsey property, but with as little extra structure as possible. So here are the sort of starting examples. We all know that if you take the edges of a complete graph on 6 points, and you two-colour those, you get a monotonic triangle. That's the starting case of Ramsey's theorem. Okay, which in symbolic notation you write K6 arrows K3. Maybe the two that shows it's two-coloured. So this means you two-colour edges of 6 points, you get a monotonic K3. Right. So, therefore, certainly, if you have some graph G that contains a K6, then trivially, when you two colour edges of G, they want to make a triangle. So, but the sparse question is the converse true? Is it true that if you are rich enough in edges, that whenever you two colour, you get a monotonic triangle? Must you have a K6? So if G arrows K3, must G contain K6? That's a starter question, that's the first sparse question you could ask. It's called sparse because no K6. The answer is no, it needn't have a K6. You can find quite an example that doesn't have a K6, it's got a K5 in it. Then you might say, how about no K5? And you fiddle around quite a lot, and you find a graph that doesn't have a K5, doesn't have a K4. Then you say, how about even no K4? And that, you know, that's quite a lot harder. So you can even get G two-colour arrow in K3 but G not containing even a K4. It's been a K3, obviously, but that doesn't much sense. This is by in the 70s. And then similarly, of course, the same question, not for two colours, but for K colours. Ask much more. So it's a graph so rich in edges that whenever you k color the edges, there's a monotonic triangle, and yet it's in the k4, and that's true, that's the original thing with Eschwiller and Rödl. That's pretty hard, that's very involved, very, very clever. Okay, so those are typical sparse theorems. You can ask similar questions, say you go to the Natlius-Gosse-Taper van der Ven's theorem. So that says, remember, natural spinally coloured progression of length M, which is M. You might say, is there a set of naturals which has got the van der Ven project of length M, but doesn't even, meaning when you finally colour it, there's a progression of length M, automatic, but doesn't even contain a length M plus 1 progression? That is actually yes and trivial if you think of the right proof of van der Ven, if you think of Hales-Jewett. So if you know the abstract van der Ven of Hales-Jewett, then you'll find Oat does it instantly. So in a modern viewpoint, that's just something terribly easy to do. And you ask strong, you can say, okay, could I have that the lines of length M have got some other Greek structure? But that's the basic idea, all these smart theorems. Now, in all finite theories, pretty much, sparse versions are by now known. So whether you're looking at partition regularity, van der Ven anything, graphing, hypergraph things, these are basically all known. And the answer always is, it exists, unless it's trivially impossible. So however contradict the two things look, if you can't spot a contradiction in 5 seconds, the answer is it does exist. It might be incredibly hard to find, but it does exist. So in the finite world, basically everything's understood. Now, let's go to the infinitary world. So, given that we know van der Ven things and finite sums, what is the absolute prototype infinitely in natural numbers? It's Heinemann's theorem. So this is the exact first question you could ever ask in infinitely sparse question. So actually, no infinitely sparse statement is known, proved. So that's why this is interesting, because this thing would be basically the first, or the simplest possible, infinitary sparse theorem. That's what would be interesting. So that's what you'd like to do. Actually, it's probably a more sensible question, since there we went for things like K3 but no K4, or length M no M plus 1, you might instead want to strengthen that to saying it doesn't ever have finite sums with 3 points. It's not clear which is the more natural version. So you might just say instead, you might say S never contains finite sums from X, Y, Z. It's not clear which is the official, simplest possible statement. So a set rich enough that when you finally colour it, you get a sequence of all sums simpler than the pairs, but unrich enough that you never have finite sums for 3 things. Just digressing for a second, so you might at first think, well, I certainly think, that this is bound to exist, because basically it doesn't truly not exist. And if you look in literature, you can find various published conjectures, so there exists conjectures, of Nestrel and Rödl. Which, as very special cases, would imply this. You know, they're saying everything. They're saying, suppose you want to allow sums of size at most k, and then have length k plus 1, you can have that, and more general stuff. All of anything you possibly hope for, you can have. So there's those. Which would imply this. Now, Neil Heinemann believes that actually, once you have singletons and pairs, that should force everything. So the published conjecture by Neil Heineman would imply that's not true. Which would imply not this. So there certainly exists a published conjecture that's false. So Neil believes that simple pairs already force this massive, massive structure. Mm. And one can't really laugh at that because one can't find a proof of sums of size 1 that isn't finite. One would hope to first find a proof of finite sums of size 1 and 2 that isn't Heinemann, and then go and think incredibly hard and find a cool set that works. But even that first bit can't be done, so perhaps Neil is right. Okay, so that's why it's a very interesting question, this question. Mm. The finitary version of it is known, as I said. So here's the finitary version. I think I'll... If I want it visible on the board, I'll just change this in place to make the finitary version. So that'll say I want x1 up to xn on the thematic. Let's talk about this. Let's make it a theorem. And it becomes there is a set. Exists a set, so for every n, you can find a set that's rich enough that whenever you finitely colour it, you get a sequence of length n, all singleton pairs from that, but it never has a triple, so it's actually this one. Okay. That's quite interesting and riddle. And uses their amazing amalgamation method. If you don't know what it is, that's fine, so I'll explain it now what amalgamation is. Okay, so what I show you now is a really, so this is actually, that's a really long, complicated, extremely clever proof. I'll show you a very simple proof of this statement here. But as that, my main interest in this is not particularly to have a, well, it's nice to have a nice simple proof of this, but I'll say at the end, I believe it tells you line one of a proof of that infantry thing. If everything is true, of course. Okay, so let's try and prove this thing. So let's fix k. K equals number of colours. I'll just fix the k. You know, for each k, you put them together far apart. Okay, so I'll tell you what a thing called a picture is. A picture consists of a few sets. S1, S2, S3, up to some Sn. A few finite sets. And the rules for a picture are going to be that there is no arithmetic structure in any column apart from silly things. So obviously, if you see here an A and a B, of course this adds itself B times does equal that itself A times. But apart from that, nothing. So I predict that I never want any finite sums to be any other finite sums. So I will never allow you to have in a column an A plus B equals C. So that's what pictures give you. So it's got seven columns, if you like, in which, in each column, nothing happens, additively, apart from trivial things. And also, I will insist that the S, the union of those, I is 1 to NSI, has no
finite sums of three things.
Okay, but that's what picture's going to be.
Okay. Now, of course, our final goal is to find a set that doesn't contain patterns of three things, but it's such that whenever you k-colour it, you get one of these beasts. Okay, so here is a warm-up question. Could we find... Can you keep that visible, up on the top? Choice of what capital N is. You saw the column. Each column is a finite set, but everything's finite. Picture such that if S is finely coloured, sorry, K coloured, and if God told us that every column was monochromatic, that's amazing good fortune.
Monochromatic set of the form, finite sums, most two, to XN. So it's not what we're aiming for, because I've imposed a rather large restriction, each column's monochromatic. Well, that's actually a very easy thing to do, because all you say is one of these objects has a certain number of points in it, n plus n choose 2 or something. Say that's 100. So let's just pick n to be 100k, i.e. big enough that whenever you k colour, some 100 columns of the same colour, and just insert into every set of 100 columns a different one of those. So that's sort of laughably easy. And what we've got is yes. Yes. Take n to be 100 times however big that set is. Let's say this has got d terms. So d is, I know, n plus n choose 2 or something like that. 100, so not 100, dk. Okay, so the number of columns I have is dk. So I do know, whatever I'm writing in the picture now, that whenever this object is k-coloured with the massive assumption it becomes monochromatic, then certainly some d columns are the same colour. So I just insert into every d set of columns one of those. That's of those. So supposing n was equal to 2. So my objects are things in the form, an x and a y and their sum. Three terms. So what I'm doing is, I'd say, pick your favourite three columns. This one, that one, that one. We'll write down a, b, a plus b, those three columns. Now pick a different set of three columns, and in those, insert c, d, c plus d. Well, you've chosen C and D to have nothing to do with A or B at all. Then take another set of three columns, maybe this column, that column, that column, insert into there E, F, E plus F, and so on. Right. Now, since I've chosen these, have no relation between them at all, it's certainly true that's a legal picture. Right? No, nothing algebraic happens in any column, and then certainly you don't get finite sums of three things. Unless if you chose them growing fast and so on. So that would be terribly easy and nice. That's how the proofs normally start, and the trouble is, what you have to do to that in order... So that's your starter picture. Your dream, of course, is a wonderful picture, which has some Ramsey arguments. Whenever it's k-coloured, there's a copy of this with each column monochromatic. But unfortunately, in doing those, you find you do bring in things like patterns x, y, and z, which is a lot of work. So actually,
I want to take a different start. Let me tell you my different starter picture.
So this will certainly work,
but I want a different starter picture.
So here's what I want instead.
What I'd like to do is, I'd like to start picking some numbers that grow fast and nothing huge. I'd say the numbers are called P1, P2, P3, and so on. Okay. And what I'm going to put inside column I, some big number, I'm going to write the following. That's how I'm doing it. I'm going to write down the number PI, and all pairwise sums of P's where the indices add up to I. So everything in the form PA plus P I minus A. All such things. Okay, so let's have a look. So in column 1, I just have P1. In column 2, I just have number P2. No, you can't repeat a thing, so no problem to P1. In column 3, I'm going to have P3 and also P1 plus P2. In column 4, I'll have P4, P1 plus P3, of course not 2B2, and in column, let's do column 5. In column 5, I'll have P5 and P1 plus P4 and P2 plus P3. And so on, some very long way. Does that make sense? That's certainly a legal picture. Nothing other than any column. I never had sums from 3 points, did I? Okay, why does this have the property I just said? Because given a K colouring, with each column monochromatic, by the ordinary theorem that says you can do finite sums next one to Xn, we certainly can find X1 up to Xn such that the entire column sub X1 plus X3 is, let's say, red, and the entire column X2 plus X4 plus X9 is red, and so on. Agreed? Because if I'm telling you that each column gets a colour, that is a colouring of natural numbers. And by applying the finite sums theorem, we therefore get some columns which work correctly. Let's suppose, for example, again, suppose n was 2. I have 3 columns, x, y, and z, such that column x, column y, column z are the same colour, and x plus y equals z. Does that make sense? Maybe it's columns, maybe it would be, I don't know, s3, s4, and S7, for example. Now, where do we see are things which work? We just take P3, P4, and P3 plus P4. P3 is an S3, yep. P4 is an S4, yep. P plus P4 is an S7, so that's okay. If I'd asked for 5 things, it's on X5, I would take the corresponding 5 x's, and those p's would work. Those in each pairwise sum column and a pair sum of those p's. No triple sums, of course, because I did not insert in column S8 the element p1 plus p2 plus p4. So this is why this is my better starter picture. Okay, so the starter picture is, you take some numbers that grow fast. In each column, you write down PI and all things up to it. And then it is up to, say, some big number, big enough for the ordinary finite sums theorem to hold there. And then we're done. And what's different between that and the before is before the motor that ran the thing at the bottom was pigeonhole. So if you have 100k points and k colours and so on. Whereas here, the motor that's running it is sort of the theorem we want to prove. Okay, right. Anyway, either way, by this nice starter picture or the previous one, what we get is a starter picture, a lovely picture S, in which if you were lucky enough to become finely coloured, you'd be business. Now, what are we going to do with that? So let me keep that S visible. So I left out column 1. Now here's what we seek. We seek a picture T. So again, same number of columns, I'm not going to change on columns, always be same number of columns, such that it's a legal picture, so no algebraic things happen, no sums of three things, such that whenever T is K coloured, there exists inside T a copy of S. Oh, I didn't know what copy means. A copy of a picture means the obvious things. You can change the numbers, but keeping what algebraic relationship is the same. So in this case, I can change the piece if I like, that's a copy of this picture. Okay? So it's like a homomorphism or whatever number, right? Copy of S with, let's say, S5 monochromatic. Let's pick something like 5. Okay? So here's what we'd like. We'd love to find a mega picture T with the following property. Whenever you k-colour T, you can find a copy of S with its fifth column monochromatic. That must be a good thing to do, right? Because we would then know that whenever T is k-coloured, there's a copy of S with one column monochromatic. And of course, having done that, we then say, now given T, let's do on column number 4. Let's find a new super picture U, for which, whenever you k-colour U, there's a copy of T with column 4 monochromatic. Oh, and therefore, there's a copy of S with columns 4 and 5 monochromatic, and so on. This is the idea, this is the whole idea of amalgamation. So I'm going to show you how to do this. But this is all, the idea of having anything in columns and doing this extension is my next show of it's a beautiful idea. So roughly the idea of having columns and then doing some cool build-up like this, which I'm trying to show you how to do, is called amalgamation. So actually, people have different words. Some people say, no, this bit here is called the partite construction, and that is called amalgamation. Some people say, no, that's the partite construction. So these three words, partite systems, partite construction, amalgamation, they'll mean the same thing basically. They mean do something where you break it into columns, where if dreaming, each column will automatically be done, and then do a beautiful shoveling together to make it automatic. So let me just do this. Let me try and do column 5 for you, and we'll see how it works. Okay. So here's how to find T. I think I'll truncate that there if I get space down here. So, what do we see when you look at the fifth column of S, this special S I chose, not the other one before, this S? What do you see? You see three numbers which have nothing to do with each other at all. Agreed? If I said to you, I want the numbers 10,137, make me an S, you could do it, didn't you? As long as they grow fast enough. So, here's what we do. Here's what T's get. So I'll now draw you T. For T5, I just want enough numbers, which grow fast and so on, so that when you k-colour them, some three are the same. So let's have, 3k, okay, 2k plus 1, or whatever it is. 2k plus 1 numbers. Okay? Here they are. They are A, B, C, D, and so on. And remember, the reason I've chosen that is whenever you k-colour this set, some three are the same colour. And now, for each set of three of those things, say it's A, B, and C, attach its pet copy of S. Okay? So solve for the P's to make a copy of S. There's masses of choice in that, right? And of course, P5 has the biggest one, C, but P5 P4 has actually got a lot of free choice in it, to save P3. So we're not restricted in any way at all on how we do this. So attach a copy of S. Of course, keeping faithfully column to column. So that trip. What I mean by that is, given the element ABC, very fast growing, choose numbers P1 up to P5, or and on. Choose numbers P1 up to P forever in such a way they have nothing to do with each other and nothing to any other numbers in that column, and such that P5 is C, P1 plus P1, which you can obviously do. Okay, it's a fiddle to write down, but of course we know we can do it. Fine. Then get your next triple. Maybe it's A, B, and D. Attach a different copy. Make them disjoint away from here. That's legal because even if it's got the same the same A, that's fine, because P1 to P4, I've got some choice in that. This is certainly done. Keep going. There are only finite things to do, so in trim we do them. But that is called the amalgamation picture. You've got a nice thing here and everything you put in. And note, I'm just using a cushion on here. This is sort of the key thing. Because A, B, and C, because those three have no relationship at all, I'm free to do this. If you do normal amalgamation of things with structure like these, you find you have to keep preserving all the structure, and then horrible constraints happen, and things aren't disjoint anymore, so it's really hard to separate them. But here, that's just totally for free. There's no free to do. Done. So that got us a T. Now, given T, pick a different column, I'll wait on that to get a U, and so on. Okay, so that's a very sort of clear. Of course, to write out that proof in detail, writing out what sufficiently large means is a pain. It's obviously a silly pain. Of course, it can be done. Right, send the proof. Now, let's go back to the infratree problem. This is my last sort of 5 minutes or so. So here is how I think the problem should start. If the answer is yes, anyway, I'm sure it is. We'll define a pic. Oh, sorry, that's going wrong. A picture we find as before, except the columns go on forever. So it's a collection of sets. It must have no algebraic conditions but trivial obvious ones, and you must never have five functions with three things. Right. So the first question would be: can we think of a starter picture? Now, what would a starter picture be? It would be going on forever, of course. Now remember, it must contain no finite sums from x, y, z ever. That is a legal picture. That's okay. And what we want is, as our start, remember, that if this is k-coloured, and if by incredible good fortune it becomes automatic, you've got an infinite sequence with all functions of size most 2, well, just do the exact thing I just did. Just put in here P1, P2, S5, put P5, P1 plus P4, P2 plus P3, so on. Note, if you were trying to copy the previous idea, or the stuff I didn't use, but put it in every subset of finite sums thing, you just put up uncountably many things, and quite bad. So that's why the previous operation gives you no idea what to do in infinite case. Here you do the exact same thing. So stop for a given sequence P1, P2, P3, it's very fast growing. Now, is this an okay starter picture? Let's check it. Certainly, you don't need five times of three things, do you? Because all entries only have one PI plus PJ or PI. That's certainly okay. Right. Suppose you've K-coloured it, and we would finally count it, and each column is monochromatic. Then that gives us a colouring of the naturals, namely by what the column looks like. Therefore, by Heinemann's theorem, you get an infinite set
with all plus sums the same colour. In particular, all sums of size goes to the same colour. So, get by Heinemann, x1, x2, and so on, such that finite sums from the xi is, say, all red. Aha. But now just take, as our, so we take PXR, thank you. PX1, PX2, and so on. That works, doesn't it? Because PXI lives in column XI, yes, that's great. How about PX1 plus PX2? Well, that lives in column that's on X2, by construction, which is the same colour. It's good. Oh, and sanity check, how about PX1 plus PX2 plus PX3, that would live in column X1 plus PX3, which is a red column, but isn't that, it doesn't exist in that, think about the pairwise sums. Remember, in column 8, I did not write down PX2 plus PX3. So that's how we sort of got this thing for free somehow. Okay, so we've got a starter picture, and that is, I believe, line 1 of the proof. Right, now the trouble is, how do you amalgamate? On any one column, it's no problem. There's no problem other things being getting smaller because you can do it on the rationals rather than naturals mop up at the end. That's not a problem. There isn't even a problem if columns are infinite. If you'd amalgamated, you know, omega plus 4 times, no problem at all. If columns are infinite, still nothing wrong with that. It all makes sense. interpret it right anyway. But unfortunately, there's the limit object. You can indeed amalgamate in column 1, you find a bigger set. So whenever it's finely coloured, then you can do it for 2, 3, 4, and so on. But the union doesn't work, unfortunately. There's no reason it should work. Let's go back and do column 1 again. And it just doesn't get anywhere. So I don't know what to do. There should be some kind of ultrafilter type thing. It should be somehow you take some sensible limit of the pictures. So the answer should be you amalgamate in some sensible way in column 1. In column 2, in column 3, and so on. Or maybe 1, 2, 1, 3, 2, 1, and so on. There should be some elegant notion of a limit of those, which gives you a final picture that you apply, you say, take this picture, then whenever we colour it, monitor a copy of this, and that, and so on. If you like, it's not working in style, so you can't go back down it very often. You can go forward, you can keep amalgamating, there's no final system which you can apply it to. So okay, so there we are. So I'm saying, I'm interested because I think this might be the first line of proof. If only one knew what the limit of animations were. I've got to know what that means. Which it feels this is the right approach, and I also feel if it doesn't work, then I lose my faith that the theorem is true anymore. So I'll leave you perhaps most of the time with the start of the question, whether or not you follow any of this or not, the question is, can you prove finite symptoms and pairs without quoting Heinemann's theorem? I think it's a very simple problem. If you don't know the proof of Heinemann's theorem, that's all the better, then you won't have your brain mislaid. Okay, so I'll stop there.
Thank you very much. Comments from the floor?
So, just to give some intuition, if I were to generate a set of natural numbers by just greedily picking the subject and not creating the finite sum of three things. Can you give me an example where, if I do this greedy construction stupidly, I don't have this k-color property?
If you always pick the smallest available thing, so you're writing down a set that doesn't contain the finite sums of three, and you're doing it greedily, there's just no reason at all why your final object should have any kind of Ramsey property at all.
It explicitly doesn't.
I have no idea what terms look like. You know what terms look like. Yes. So yeah. That's a very good question. All types of explicit ways of doing it. We say build up a set as follows. Either they are avoiding plus sums from three. Either they're lovely constructions, but there are so few algebraic things in them that the rounding totally fails. Or they're very dense. You have no idea what formula it is for the terms to know the bounds being specifically true or not. So I don't know.
that might even, it could even be that's true if only if the whole thing's true. I don't know.
We draw a line there? Or any more comments from anyone? Thank you very much. Now we can go upstairs and have some more coffee and whatever else is left. But I would like to complete the day by saying out loud how grateful I am to our administrative staff for, well, not here, but I want you to be able to witness the fact that I actually said that we're very grateful to our administrative staff for organising all the things that we relied upon, including looking after the room where we weren't there, and giving us lunch, and generally making it, I think, a perfectly happy day for us. Thank you very much also for coming, for making the trouble to go from Cambridge, from Brighton, from Paris, from wherever everyone is. Thank you for making this a very delightful meeting for all of us. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam, for organising, initiating it all.
Well, thanks for getting the money. We said that at the beginning, but you weren't there.
Department, so yeah. Thank you.